That's kind of weird, man. I hope everybody kind of figures out their shit.
Yeah.
That doesn't...
Don't want to hurt the group for sure.
Yeah. What you gonna do? House divided against itself cannot stand.
That's right. That is right. Just gotta know how to move forward, man. You know, when I used to have a bunch of engineers working for me, you know, it's a bunch of guys that all think they know everything. So there was a lot of times where, you know, you just had clashes of personality. And it's one thing I always taught, you know, no matter how bad we fight, when it's over, it's over. But we need to move forward, you know, because we're all here with one goal in mind. It worked pretty good for them. I mean, I got in arguments with some of my engineers. I tried to only get in those types of situations when it was just one-on-one. I didn't like doing that kind of stuff in front of people. But occasionally, you know, in meetings, shit went down. And I remember one meeting, these guys started getting uncomfortable and started just walking out of the meeting because they saw how bad it was getting. To this day, me and that guy are, you know, best friends, you know.
You got that whole difference between business and pleasure. Like, right. You know, we got business, you know. We got to take that hill. We can disagree about how we got to take it, but at the end of the day, we got to take it, and how you or I feel about it is irrelevant. We just got to come up with the best plan for taking the hill.
Yeah.
Same thing, you know.
When you're like family fights, and then they move forward. That's the way you got to look at it.
So, hey guys, welcome to the show. It is March 6th, 2017. Scott and I, we're going to talk about the Alamo, but then we realized that we didn't want to talk about the Alamo. Pretty horrific, but you know enough about it. It'll show up in the history segment. But we're actually going to talk about something that's almost not even existent in the genre anymore,
except on the internet. Don, the guy that plays Sleazy P. Martini for Gwar, he actually has an internet show on the station where he hosts movies every week.
So we're going to talk about that nearly dead piece of Americana. The horror host. So strap in, join us. We're gonna run through the history segment because there's a little bit of history to chat about, and then we're gonna get into talking about some of our favorite horror hosts. So this day in history, March 6th, 2017, in 12 BC, Roman Emperor Augustus was named the Pontifex Maximus, incorporating the position of high priest into that of emperor. So anytime you hear about some millennial who's bitching about the separation of church and state because somebody put up a plastic nativity out in the front of the courthouse, realize that this guy, previously, church and state had been somewhat separated. Ancient Rome was a vaguely secular society because for their conquerings, they made it kind of a policy that they would just simply annex the people. As long as you paid us taxes, then we, you know,
you
can do whatever you want to do, and it kept people happy.
Right.
When Augustus assumed the role of high priest, then he was not only the highest legal authority and military authority, he also became the largest spiritual authority in the nation. So he could just simply... Whatever he wanted, and for whatever reason he wanted...
He ran shit.
He was the boss. And you couldn't say anything because he was the high priest. Or, you know...
He dealt out your punishments. He,
right.
Across the board.
You could say, well, my God doesn't believe in that. He'd say, well, I am above your God. I'm the high priest. I'm the emperor. So, the more things change, the more things stay the same. Okay... Fast forward a long, long time. 1836, this date, the fall of the Alamo. San Antonio, Texas, 1836. Quite impactful. There's lots and lots of stories from both sides about what happened, but brave men fell on both sides. Mm-hmm. It was a... for lack of a better word, it was kind of a suicide run. It didn't have to be a suicide run, but they decided to stay behind and try to hold on. And once they got surrounded, Santa Ana was pretty well known for not letting people go.
Yeah, put your foot down and that's it.
So, the fall of the Alamo, if you've if you happen to have a beverage, pour one out for the 100, however many was it, 136 men?
Something like that, yeah.
Against the 2,000 to 5,000 Mexican soldiers. I mean, that's one hell of a final stand.
You know, and everybody knows the Alamo. You know, I never took Texas history or anything. I know about the Alamo.
Everybody knows
Pee Wee Herman, you know, was in Pee Wee's Big Adventure. He was looking for the basement in Alamo.
Dude, how devastating must it have been to discover the Alamo had no basement?
he made it. He was where he needed to be.
I remember watching that movie when it first came out, and when I was a kid growing up in South Texas, we went to the Alamo for field trips. Like, I'd been to the Alamo like 10 times, and that whole, like, Adobe, where they have like the little museum stuff.
Say Adobe.
The Alamo itself, if you've never been to the Alamo, the building that is the iconic building that you see is actually the Chapel of the Alamo.
Yeah.
And it's a formidable structure, but I mean, it's only maybe 100 feet from front to back, and it's probably like maybe 20 feet high and about 45, 50 feet wide. It's not a fortress. This is a chapel inside of a fortress that was about half the size of San Antonio's downtown. Mm-hmm. It was a big area. But that whole touristy, like, walking tour that they had in the movie, I remember being like, I didn't see that. where were like the Mexican dummies grinding corn? That wasn't there. And there certainly wasn't a basement. Like, anyway, don't want to get too far into the history segment here. 1992, the Michelangelo virus began to affect computers across the country.
I vaguely remember that.
You remember the Michelangelo?
Vaguely. I remember hearing. Yeah,
the only reason I remember the Michelangelo virus, I was in high school. And I was in a high school computer class. And this was big deal. Like, it was national news. This was like Y2K. This was back in the day before they understood what computers are and how they worked and what networking right. was and all of that fun stuff. And I remember in this computer class, we didn't have the internet. Our computers were just simply plugged into the wall.
Yeah. Yeah,
they ran software. There was no networking between computers or between the computers and the outside world.
Yeah.
And but they were so afraid of the Michelangelo virus, they made us unplug our computers every to night. Make sure that it wouldn't happen. Well, I had a buddy that he was kind of a computer nerd, and he what he did was every now and then for work, they'd have us work on a piece of a project.
Yeah.
So you move from desk to desk. So you'd start here, and you type in your code, and then you'd move to the next. And if everybody typed in their code, like, your code might just be like 1 square inch of green, and then you'd move over, and then like 1 square inch of green, and then the guy behind you would be like doing 1 square inch of black, and
right
at the end you'd have like what looked like a candy cane, and it had like different colors or whatever, and that was the project. But what Jamin did is he went from computer to computer, is he'd type in his code, but then he'd install a disk that uploaded a screensaver. So when the teacher's standing there at the end of the class, and we've all got our little black and green and red candy cane that proved that we did it all, as the computers went to screensavers, they all went to black screen, and then all of them opened eyes and started looking around. And then they'd close them again, and then open them again at different little intervals. The teachers flipped out. They were sure that was Michelangelo, and he was looking in at us. And I remember she shut down the entire room and turned off the lights and made us all leave. And so I was like a junior in high school, and Jamin's like, oh. It was the greatest thing ever. That's why I remember the Michelangelo virus, because it was going to be a big deal.
Those are great pranks, man. I remember I was working offshore in 98 or 99, and there was an EXE file somebody had put together the email out, and we opened it. This box would come up saying, you know, your hard drive is being deleted now. And all of a sudden, it was the image of the files being sent down to the trash can. And we did it to a tool pusher on the rig, on his computer. He started ripping wires out the wall, started screaming for the tool man to come and help him. It was hilarious, man. It was an awesome prank.
good old pranks. So, notable births. This date in 1475, I think it might just be tangentially, maybe coincidentally, Michelangelo was born. 1619, Cyrano de Bergerac.
Okay.
In 1906, Lou Costello. So Abbott and Costello. Yes.
Who's on first?
That's it. 1917, Will Eisner. Comic creator.
Yes, yeah. We're from Mad Magazine and New York Times, if not mistaken. Yeah,
many,
I've
many
got a couple of his lithographs over here.
1923, Ed McMahon. Johnny Carson's sidekick.
Yeah, no, Star Hey-o! Search. Star Search, don't forget about that.
Oh, yeah. 1936, Mayor Marion Barry, the crackhead mayor
got elected
Washington, D.C.
Got elected twice.
We talked about him on another episode. Yep. Chris Rock, how am I supposed to tell my kids say no to drugs
when the mayor
smokes crack and gets reelected? Like, what are you going to do smoking crack? I can be mayor.
Twice.
1946. Happy birthday to David Gilmour of Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
Notable deaths. Davy Crockett, Jim Bowie, etc. Alamo,
right.
And Ayn Rand died this date in 1982. Atlas Shrugged.
Okay. Very good book. Very, very good book. Highly recommend it if you haven't read it yet.
So, this episode was actually going to be Scream Queens. We were going to talk about those damsels in distress. The thing was, Scott and I kept talking, and we kept coming back to Elvira. And I kept having to hit him on the technicality that Elvira has never been a Scream Queen. She's been a horror host. And there's a notable difference. Elvira is the one that shows us the movies with the Scream Queens in it.
Yes.
But Elvira's boss.
And she still steals the show every time.
And she's still here. So we went ahead and we switched it around. We'll do Scream Queens next time or the time after that.
Yeah.
Kind of depending on how the wind blows.
Because there are a lot of them.
But seeming as the subject matter kept turning to Elvira, and Elvira's pretty active. I follow her on Twitter. She could follow me on Twitter if she was cool. But she's still active. She's still doing quite a bit of stuff.
And she's awesome, man. And talk about a huge part of my childhood.
Absolutely. And to be fair, she kind of landed in the genre as they were phasing that sort of
stuff out. Yeah.
That stuff out, and she managed to hold on and still make a really good play of it. So we're going to kind of get into the history of the horror host and kind of where they came from and what they're still doing out there. So, take it away, Scott.
Okay. You know, I think the advent of the host in general, just with radio and television, was a real big deal back in the day because it helped audiences get into the show, kind of the bumper music in between segments and everything. And just the horror genre itself all of a sudden popped up and host started taking that role over too.
Yeah, it says here, in October of 1957, Scream Gems released a bunch of old Universal horror movies to syndicated television, naming the collection Shock. They encouraged the use of hosts for the broadcast. This is why many of the early programs were called Shock Theater. Viewers loved the package as well as the concept, and the ratings soared. A Son of Shock package was released in 1958.
And that goes back to what I was saying. You know, people love horror. They love to be scared. It's that adrenaline rush.
And so, children of the internet, my minions of the podcast, who, if you get bored with the next few things that I say, you can stop and you can have literally the entire collection of all human knowledge at your fingertips. You have to harken back to a day when there was two or three TV channels. I mean, this was 1957.
Right.
If you had a television, if you had a TV, it might have had two or three stations.
And you didn't watch it all day because the tubes would burn out.
You didn't watch it all day because the tubes would burn out. Programming was very selective. It was mostly used for news and even music. There wasn't a whole lot of television. There weren't shows. These were all things that were being developed. This was sort of like the internet in a genre that developed as it developed. In other words, they developed the TV show, but then they needed to finance it, so at the same time they developed the TV commercial.
Yeah.
And different, like, all of this stuff was experimental. But what the networks had, if they had partnerships, was they had a cache of old movies that were available. These reels that were just sitting in storerooms.
They weren't expensive to throw in the air.
Movies that had come out years ago, they'd already had their box office run. Maybe they were in you know, in drive-ins and repeat theater, but, you know, you couldn't just pop a VHS in. You couldn't just pop a DVD in or hit Netflix. If you wanted to watch something, you were pretty much just, it was not active entertainment. It was very passive. You, right. You got what was available.
And you didn't know what it was going to be like until you watched it.
There was no, that's it.
Yeah.
And, a lot of this stuff, you know, they wanted the horror host to kind of like narrate in, because a lot of these old movies, I mean, they were true horror for the day. They scared people. So they wanted the horror host to kind of maybe tamp down a little bit of the fear and maybe narrate it in and kind of talk in like, oh, okay, well, here comes the crazy flying monsters. Right. And so that you kind of knew what you were after.
Yeah.
You know, you knew what you were in for.
And urban legends back then were, you know, that was gospel, so to speak. You know, there's no way of disproving stuff like that. And you had to try to come up with explanations for things that happened, and a lot of times the people would jump on them. Okay, Creature Features was another film package that was released in the early 1960s and added to in the 1970s. The films in this package range from horror and science fiction films of the 50s, British horror films of the 60s, and the Japanese giant monster movies of the 60s and 70s. The package also included an uncut print of Night of the Living Dead, which changed the horror genre as we know it.
Those of you who have seen Night of the Living Dead outside of context of things like, you know, The Walking Dead, you know, if you take that movie and you separate it from all of its progeny and just watch it on its own, that is a rough, rough movie.
Yep.
It is.
Especially, imagine for the time, you know, it was a really bad one back then.
And to have that be showcased on just late night TV.
Yep. Which was family hour a lot of times. Just when everybody would just go in. When TV was on, everybody was watching it normally.
And even now, if you look at kind of the horror genre, to kind of rip on that Donald Trump Make America Great Again baseball hat, there's a movement out there of people wearing t-shirts that say Make Horror Rated R Again.
Yeah, which is it killed me when they stopped.
You know, we talk about it all the time how horror, especially in the 80s, the 70s, was bad. It's 80s too. I mean, the MPAA, whatever you think about the rating system, I disagree with it a lot of times. But when a movie maker was setting out and saying that this movie is going to have violence and gore and sexuality and fear in it, and the MPAA comes back and says, okay, it's going to be rated R, there's a lot of movie directors who are like, good, that's what we're going for. That means we're doing something right.
Yeah.
Now they go back and they cut and they recut movies. And like even Rob Zombie has to cut and recut movies to get them to be a rated R. And he's on the fringe of movie making. Like now, if it's not rated PG-13, they're afraid they're going to get a wide release.
Yeah.
Whereas nobody was afraid to release a Friday the 13th back in the day.
Right.
And nobody kidded each other that it was 17 and up that only watched it either. But, you know, they did what they could. We weren't as sensitive back then.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine having some of the more extreme pieces cut out and just shown on late night TV. That's why they needed a horror host to
kind of
come in and soften the blow.
Okay, let's talk about some of the early hosts that kind of laid the groundwork for what we know as the current, or what became to be the horror host. First television horror host generally accepted to be Vampira, which I remember Vampira. I didn't watch any of it live, but I remember hearing about Vampira and seeing clips of it. Vampira's show featured mostly low-budget suspense films, as few horror films had yet to been released at that time for television broadcast, which is what you were just getting at. Despite its short 1954 to 1955 run, the Vampira show set the standard format for horror host shows to follow. So that was the beginning of everything.
Right. And, you know, Vampira, I don't know much about her, but, you know, she was given a format. She was kind of given a post-commercial spot where she could talk about, you know, before the movie, she could introduce the film, and then between commercials, she could talk about, you know, whether it was jokes or whether it was the director or little stories about the actors or whatever, just little blurbs about the movie in these little short segments, right. Which is what you know when you think of about a horror host. That's what you think about. You think about somebody talking about the movie as it's playing, and she set that format.
Yep. Okay, the hosts were often plucked from the ranks of studio staff. They would just find somebody working on set and bring them in. In the days of live television, it was not uncommon for the weatherman or booth announcer to finish a nightly news broadcast and run over another part of the soundstage for a quick costume change and start doing the horror hosting. Well, the Iron Man football type thing. Iron Man television studio. More than one role.
Right.
Well, a few early hosts like Zachary and Vampira became the icons of this nationwide movement. Most hosts were locals. So a lot of the horror hosts were actually local television. I mean, public access television when I was younger back home, they actually had horror hosts that would show some films that they didn't have to pay any kind of residuals for or anything. Mm-hmm. You go ahead and throw them up there.
Yeah, and it says here that even though they were locals and they, you know, they weren't super big time and it was kind of a part-time job and not necessarily even a desired job, but just the boss said go do it. It says the earliest hosts are remembered with great affection, and I can see that. I mean, I remember growing up. I mean, you're here. You haven't been here forever, but you know, it's like our local TV news people like Dave Ward. You know,
yeah, well, I had the same thing back home.
It's like, you know, he's not a horror host or whatever, but, you know, he's been around forever.
Because part of the family,
he's been,
almost.
He's been in the house for so long
mm-hmm.
that, you know, you if something happens to him, you feel bad, you know?
Right.
Like, well, you can't, you know. And imagine if he was dressed in a cape and introducing Nightmare on Elm Street back in the 80s.
Right.
You'd have even more of an affection for him. So then we get to the later hosts. Basically, guys, what happened is a satellite TV and cable started taking over the locals. You started getting more national syndication. The genre sort of got condensed. You know, so instead of a whole bunch of local affiliates, you started getting affiliates out of Chicago, affiliates out of L.A. or whatever. Those guys became a little bit bigger, a little bit more known, and it kind of got squeezed. So you have your main guys kind of just went away. They didn't have any real big national talent.
Yeah.
Until Elvira.
Elvira. She struck a chord with society. Ronan Cassandra Peterson, of course, for those that do not know. She's been doing this since the 80s, and she still continues to this day to perform and dress up. And she's actually going to be in the Houston area here this month for a pinball tournament down in Fresno. You can go ahead and head out there and see her and get an autograph. And she'll be christening a new pinball machine, which Elvira pinball machines. I remember playing those when I was younger, and even the Arcade Expo, there's always a couple of them over there.
My dad being the wild and crazy dude that he was. I remember, I was living down in Corpus. We were as a family, I was like 9. We were at a gas station, and there was an Elvira stand-up, like one of those cardboard stand-ups.
Yeah, she's doing Budweiser's a lot.
And he like talked to the guy, and he's like, "Can I take that?" And I'm like, "Sure." He brought it home. My mom was like,
"Where are you putting that?
Where are you going to put that?" He's like, "I don't know. I was thinking about putting it right here in the living room." She's like, "You're not putting that in here." Like, there's certain memories just pop up, and I'm like, how did I not remember that? But now that we're talking about it, she's like, my God.
It's an award.
Yeah. And I won it. It's a door prize. It's, you know, it says Fragile on it.
Yeah, she has definitely become the most recognized horror host that we've had. I mean, Johnny Lightning did a round of cars of hers. She was everywhere at one time.
She's certainly popular in the 80s, but then, I mean, she's completely held on.
Yeah.
And she's kind of having a resurgent. I mean, our show didn't just kind of spring out of nowhere. We're a couple of guys in our early 40s that have loved 80s horror this whole time. And whenever we sit down, we start talking, like, okay, who are some of your favorites? We like Jason, and we like Freddy, and we like Carrie, and we like Christine, and we like Elvira, and we like, you know, she's one of those that just gets thrown in the genre.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's always, you know, she's always on, you know, on the sexy side, and then she's also on the raunchy side. You know, yep. She's always, you know, keep that shit rated R, man, because whenever you have your little jokes on the side, those things matter. You know, the thing about horror is, if you take it too seriously, it can take you into some dark places.
Yeah.
But you can take horror for what it is, which is part of the human condition. I mean, we all live, we all die, and if your freaking dog hops over the thing, he's gonna bite me, I'm gonna bleed, right?
Right.
That's horrifying, but you have to laugh at it too, because yep. otherwise you just
end there's up humor, there's humor in everything.
You end up stuck in your house just scared to leave.
Yep.
On a just in case, and that's more horrifying than anything.
Oh yeah, of course.
So, you know, you've got to have that comedy.
It's like I've told my kids with horror. My daughter's been going to haunted houses since she was 4 years old. You have to be able to separate that fantasy from reality. That's the big thing.
When I look at Elvira, I don't want to separate the fantasy from nothing. No. Just put the wig back on, sweetheart.
Hey, have you seen her? She can leave it off, actually. She's a beautiful woman. To this day, she is a beautiful woman.
Don't listen to anything I say.
I think she jump-started my puberty when I was a kid.
I told you, my dad brought home that big skinny knee, and I'm like, trying not to look too hard, because I'm like, he's getting fussed at, and I'm like, it's just like Ralphie in fucking Christmas Story. I'm looking at that fly up there. I'm not
what was mom talking about? I don't even know what's going on. Yeah, she jump-started that genre.
So one of the most fun things as far as horror hosts go, because I really thought this was just a thing of the past. I mean, there's YouTube, and you can watch old stuff, and it doesn't happen anymore. Most people don't even watch regular TV. I mean,
yeah,
you and I do, but we've had a conversation about, we're those weirdos that actually seek it out. Most people don't. So when my youngest daughter... When my youngest daughter was on the way, we knew we were going to have a baby. My wife and I were trying to figure out what we're going to do. Just some money saving and some time saving and like, what's this, what's that? I've never been much of a TV guy. I could care less. I'll watch it if it's on for a while, and then I'll get bored and go do something else. She loves TV. But she'll sit there and she'll watch Friends over and 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 over. And so where I say something along the lines of, wow, if we're paying $180 a month for cable to just watch Friends,
you just need that one station.
We could go buy the Friends box DVD set. Box set, yeah. Cancel the cable, and then we'll have like $200 a month extra.
Right.
That's just me. And I would always get, you know, well, you don't even like TV, so you're not even in part of this conversation. Like, okay, whatever, dude. So then one day she's crunching the numbers herself, and she's like, you know, if we were to just get rid of the cable, we'd have like $200 a month extra. I'm like, that's an interesting observation. So she's like, well, $200 a month extra, that means in like, you know, 5 months we could buy a big flat screen TV instead of this piece of crap we have. Like, that's interesting math, but what are you going to attach to the big screen TV? Because if we're ditching the cable,
right?
Like, just like, no, we'll just watch Netflix and Hulu and stuff. It's all, we'll get a smart TV. It's all inside. It's like, you know,
do it.
Let's do it. That's the best idea we've ever had. So we go, we cancel the cable, we go buy the TV. Put up an antenna outside, run the antenna. Haven't seen off-air antenna TV in like years. I don't even know if it still exists. Ever since they went from the analog to digital,
yeah.
I don't even know what channels are available. So I get that thing and I plug it in, thinking there's going to be like Telemundo is pretty much what I thought I was going to see.
There's a ton of stations.
And there's a ton of stations, and like for every network TV station, there's like two movie stations.
Yeah.
And then, like, on down the line, and I was like, this is amazing. And I flip, and we get to channel 57. And it just so happened, I flip it, and I see Superman. Like, George Reeves Superman.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, are you kidding me? Like, I don't even think you can buy this on I don't think you could buy this, and it's on TV right now. Then they go to commercial, and they're like, welcome to our Super Sci-Fi Saturday night. You're watching Superman, followed by Batman at 6, Wonder Woman at 7, the Hulk at 8. It's just
and
like,
they could show all these old shows.
And it's just like going through, it's like Star Trek, and then at 10 o'clock, Svengoolie. Like, what is Svengoolie? And I Google it, and it's like, oh, he's a horror host out of Chicago. And tonight, he's playing Son of Frankenstein. And I was just like, I've been paying for TV, and
everything's right here.
This little block of television is all I ever want to watch ever. Ever. This is all I care about ever. And it's right here, and it's for free.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, because you can even catch the news. You can catch all the local stuff, too. And it's
how cool is it? I get my little girl. I'm like, hey, baby, come here. She's like, what? I was like, we're going to get under this blanket, and we're going to watch this. She's like, what are we going to watch? So, she's like, Daddy, it's Batman. I'm like, you're damn right, it's Batman. Just you wait. When Batman's over, Wonder Woman comes on. She's like, so now, dude, I keep her good on Saturday because as soon as she starts stepping out of line, it's like, I guess you don't want to watch Wonder Woman. She's like, and she goes and puts on her outfit and her little cape. They go to bed. I watch Svengoolie. old Universal horror. From
the same movie, Monsters of Movie Land. Film that.
So I wish Elvira would get. I mean, I love Svengoolie, don't get me wrong, but if Elvira was to go back to hosting,
that would be awesome.
I would watch every second of it. You tell her that when you meet.
I would definitely do that.
This guy wants to watch you host a horror movie. And she could host, like, the sexy stuff from the 70s.
Whatever she wants.
Whatever she wants.
Okay, now it also mentions in the late 80s the beginning of Mystery Science Theater 3000, which, while they did have some of the Japanese giant monster movies, as they mentioned earlier, it was more sci-fi, but I love Mystery Science Theater. I'm glad they're rebooting it. Hopefully they can keep the same chemistry going on and the same way the flow of the program. But, man, I used to love Mystery Science Theater, dude.
So I never got a chance to really watch them. I've seen a few episodes, but I never really... When they were on, I was doing other things. I wasn't watching TV much at all.
See, what I love about it is, you know, the first time I watched it, I was like, this is what me and my cousin do when we're watching movies anyway. You know, we throw in some lines, and we talk about what's going on, and we make jokes, and it was great to watch, man. It was really, really cool.
See, this time when I open this beer...
Be careful with this
one. I'm going to go ahead and put the rag down.
We've been pouring beers out all night.
I don't know. I got some that was over-carbonated. You hear that?
There it goes.
Some bitch.
That's really odd.
That is weird.
Because they've been sitting there for a while, you know?
Ah. There you go. Pouring out the brunette. Shout out to Nebraska Brewing. I get my brunette and I get my Southern Star Blonde Pale Ale. And get two girls at the same time on a Friday night. Gotta say, that brunette's a new favorite, though.
You know, what I like about this is, you know, speaking of the current generation of horror hosts, in the past 10 years, a new generation of hosts have appeared in local markets, as well as a national level, including, you know, a ton of them showing up on the internet. With, you know, with the advent of certain websites that actually are their own... television station. It's pretty neat. I don't know if you ever checked any of those out.
I haven't really seen many. I mean,
I'll send you some links. The one that Don does is pretty funny. I mean, he's a funny guy to begin with. He, you know, Sleazy P. Martini is people that like metal music. They remember him very fondly from Gore days and everything, and all the videos that Gore did, VHS tapes they used to release. But he does a good job. He flows with it. He makes some hilarious jokes. He's very off color. If you're sensitive, you don't want to watch it because you will be offended quickly.
If you're sensitive by anything at all, if you're fucking sensitive to razor blades scraping your face off, you don't want to hang out with Guar or do
they
anything.
Don't give a shit.
You don't even want to have their CD anywhere in near your neighborhood because they don't give a fuck.
Oh no,
they're gonna find out what bothers you. And they're going to kick that thing right in the balls.
Oh, yeah, and it was so funny. A couple years ago there at Comic Palooza, and I was working with them for the weekend. And they had podcast hosts that kept coming up to do interviews, and especially the females, they would immediately offend and they would just walk away. And they came up to him at the end of the show, and they were about to do the panel. And somebody asked that they do the panel with everybody in costume. And they tried to explain to him and said, look, if you want a serious panel where we actually answer questions, you know, correctly, have half of us not dressed and half of us dressed. Because if we're in costume, we're in character. And that's what you're going to get the whole time. And they wanted them to all be in costume. And it was, they just didn't give a shit, man. They did not break character at all.
Looking here, it says Rob Zombie used to be a horror host.
I saw that. Well, I know he used to work on set for, can't remember what station it was, but he was like a grip or some shit like that.
Well, he was also on Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah. Yep.
Or Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Playhouse. But it may be one of those internet broadcasts.
Maybe so.
Because I remember when Freddy Krueger did it in the 80s. I remember he had a short-lived show.
Well, a lot of old characters, like Grandpa Munster, you know, he used to be alive back in the 80s.
Yes, yes.
You know, I'm sitting like looking through this list here, and some of them, a lot of these guys are like just locals, and they, like this current Svengoolie, he's like son of Svengoolie. There was an original Svengoolie.
Yeah, I remember the original one. The original one wasn't the movie Fright Night was based loosely on the combination of Vincent Price and the original Svengoolie, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
Yeah.
So then we can get into, like, the Crypt Keeper.
Yep.
He's a puppet, but, I mean, he introduced the Tales from the Crypt.
Did you know they're bringing back Tales from the Crypt, I heard recently? To be directed by M. Night. I don't know how I feel about that.
He's got his moments. I don't think he deserves as much of the hate.
He hasn't had a moment in a while, though. The Happening just ruined it for me. That movie was just...
To be fair... Okay, so... And this is not a defense of Shyamalan. So much of a director's creative vision gets conflated by the studio. And I'm curious, for example, I enjoyed Suicide Squad, for example. Have you seen Suicide Squad?
No, I haven't.
Suicide Squad? Okay. Everybody hated it. I thought that they kind of were looking for reasons to hate it, because I really enjoyed it. But I wasn't trying to enjoy it for something it wasn't. I was just enjoyed it for what it was. It was just kind of an action movie and whatever. But I know for a fact that, like, the Batman Superman, there was so much stuff that they wanted to do that the studio was like, no, you have to make it darker. You know, you have to bring it. And then it was Deadpool. So, like, these guys all have, for lack of a better word, they all have each other's dicks in their hands. And as soon as the wind blows and they feel a little bit of stiffening, they're like, do it that way.
Right.
You know, and that's
and they beat it to death.
That's, yeah, and then it's all the way across the board. Gone are the days where there was no internet. You didn't have freaking, like, instant messaging from one lot to the next being like, oh, they're doing something funny with a dick in a hand.
Right.
Like, you know, like, they, to where the directors could have their own vision. And even now when they have their own vision, unless you're a James Cameron or just way up there,
you're going to be told what to do.
They're going to just say, okay, fine, it's a direct-to-video release. You're like, well, I'm $500 million under. And they're like, cool, put it on your credit card, because if, you know, we want Superman to have a romance with the Martian chick, and if you don't want to put it in there, then we're just not going to release the movie. You know? So what do? You go back and you reshoot.
Right.
Right? You know? So I don't... I think Shyamalan actually has quite a bit of creative wealth that he's just not been allowed because he had a couple missteps.
Okay.
If he gets in a Tales from the Crypt, if it's a movie, but it's in shorts, and he's able to do his little twists.
Yeah, just like those movies used to do back at the Creepshow and in Twilight Zone movies.
Yeah.
Same way those kind of played out.
If he can do those little flip twists and make a good, I think that'll bring him back on top.
Right.
I want to like that guy.
My theory has always been that he kept trying to outdo himself instead of sticking with the formula that worked. You know, let's try to see where we could bring it next. Instead of sticking with something that, you know, worked well the first two movies. Let's keep
going. It's a magician's trick. Once Penn and Teller started showing off how their tricks were done, they had to be that much better to be magicians, right? Because once the trick is revealed,
you can't do it anymore.
You can't do it anymore.
Yeah, stop bringing the astonishment.
So that was another thing, was he kept trying to do that twist ending, so everybody was in there looking for the twist
waiting
ending.
For it.
And then whenever and it was revealed, if it wasn't as good as Icy Dead People, which was a really, really good twist ending, but that's one for the record books. You have to make a couple of other normal movies that don't have that in it. And then, you know, you can build yourself back up. You're not going to be able to do that every time.
No, you can't.
He revealed it. He showed his hand in The Sixth Sense, and once it was shown, everybody was looking. They were waiting to see that ace up the sleeve,
right?
And everybody saw it. Or if they didn't see it, once it was revealed, they were like, "I don't like that." I think he could do a good job. Apparently, that new movie with Professor X was pretty good. Split.
Yeah, they hear that one was good. Somebody was talking to me about it earlier today, if I'm not mistaken.
So
I heard it's good.
I mean, James McAvoy's a good actor, so.
It's one of those things where, you know, his name started getting attached to stuff, and I
right.
didn't even bother watching it.
Oh, Shyamalan.
Shyamalan, yeah.
You're going to have a hard time. I mean, but I don't know. I think he's got a... Apparently, he's writing right now. He's working on the script for Unbreakable 2.
Really?
Because, and I don't know, because I haven't seen Split. Unbreakable was...
That's the one with Bruce Willis, right?
Was Bruce Willis. Unbreakable, conceptually, was a brilliant idea. You remember Unbreakable?
Yeah, I remember... One of the things I remember about it, I've only seen parts of it.
But it was the slowest, most...
Build.
No music having, pensive, staring across rooms, and no real story building movie. It was just dry and slow. So then whenever it was revealed, you didn't really care. Because
right.
Bruce Willis's character was kind of... Like, he was a dickhead. He was unlikable. Samuel L. Jackson's character was somewhat likable, but useless. Then whenever it comes to find out, oh, he's a supervillain and he's a superhero, you're like, okay, well, that's not how that's supposed to work. Realizing it's supposed to be in a real-life situation, but this has been a dry and boring movie. Cool twist. That's all you got.
Bad delivery.
Apparently with the new Split movie, and I haven't seen it, but apparently it's in the same universe. And something I read, and it was not a spoiler, but said that like a couple of cops were talking about that guy. Like, this is the craziest guy since that Mr. Glass guy. So it's like, sets it up that it's in the same universe that Bruce Willis lived in. And then Shyamalan was like, now I'm working on closing the trilogy.
Okay.
Which if he makes it adventurous, like The Incredibles or something...
Have you ever read Mace? A comic book. Mage, I'm sorry. A comic book called Mage. Kevin Smith, whenever Unbreakable came out, came out and said, this is Mage.
Oh, was it?
He stole this from a comic book. And I always wondered how much it was actually like Mage.
Never read
okay.
it.
Okay.
There's a lot out there, though. That's... I'm reading a book right now. So, I'm sure you're familiar with Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And I realize we're off the horror host. We'll loop it back around. But you've read Harry Potter.
Yes, some.
Well, you've seen the movies. You know what it's about.
Yeah.
So, for those of you under rocks who haven't, Harry Potter is a little boy who lives in a real world who's then told that he is, in fact, magically gifted, and he's taken into a magical world where he goes to school and learns how to be a magician inside this magical world. That's 7 books worth of wonderful, wonderful stuff, but that's the shortest way around that.
Yeah.
There's a TV series out now. There's a series of books my wife read. I read part of the first one, then the Kindle died, and we couldn't get it back, and then the TV series came out, and she's like, oh, well, it just follows the series anyway. It's called The Magicians, which follows the identical story arc, but they're all older. They're like college kids, so it's not, instead of like elementary school kids... finding out that you're a wizard, it's like college kids finding out that your magic is real.
Yeah.
So it's much more sexy, and it's much more dirty, and just kind of you know, kind of a little more fun for grown-ups to, you know. I just picked up a book the other day that follows the exact same arc. I'm pretty sure they were all written right at around the same time.
Yeah.
Which one was maybe first to come out, and then the other ones got pushed because that agent had read something. You don't know.
Started getting hard, and people said,
you know, but I kind of find it hard to believe that all three of them were like, hey, I got an idea.
Independently exclusive, yeah.
Well, no, they're all independently exclusive.
As far as the ideas.
The idea is a simple one. There could be 1,000 of them. These three happened to get picked up sort of around the same time.
Yeah.
One of them went into the stratosphere. The other two have kind of floated around. The other two were quite successful, but they're not Harry Potter.
Right.
But you don't have to copy off somebody else's paper to be like, what if somebody living in the modern world was to realize they were actually a wizard? That's a pretty simple concept. You just have to write it well.
Yeah.
And then be really fucking lucky. And then really lucky 7 more times, and then a whole lot more lucky after that. But that doesn't mean that they cheated off each other's papers.
Yeah.
So.
Understood. Let's see where we're at now. I was looking at some of these newer ones to see exactly what was here.
Mr. Lobo.
Carlos Borloff. Some of these are just real campy. These are the ones that are on the internet. Dr. Gangrene.
You know, you're gonna come up with a name. Really, they're gonna be like, hey, go in the back, check, you know, throw some white paint on your face and hop into a tuxedo, and you're like, what's your horror name? Who are you gonna, you're like, we're in 5, 4, 3. Dr. Gangrene's a pretty cool name.
Kind of like that movie with what's his name? Hiding Out. Where he's picking his name, he saw a coffee can. He said, Maxwell Hauser. Maxwell Hauser, that's my name.
Max Power. Max Power from The Simpsons. He looks at the hairdryer. He was like, I wish my name could be Max Power. That's the coolest name ever. Dr. Sargophagi. That's my favorite one from the 19th.
Sargophagi. Jeez, I'm.
So ultimately, guys, these are the people who are showing you scary movies that were meant by the creators to frighten and disturb. These people were brought in to unfrighten and undisturb you long enough to keep you watching.
Bring the punch down a little bit.
To buy the Mr. Clean or the scrub brush or, you know, whatever Sears and Maytag happened to be selling that night on late night TV.
Another way it worked is, you know, if a movie was boring, you still waited to see what the host was going to do in between segments.
Right, and they joke it up.
Yeah,
it is a fantastic piece of Americana, and I know we got off in the weeds a little bit, but you know, if you don't like us getting off in the weeds, you got to send us an email and tell us something, because lately the email box has been somewhat empty. No, well, it's been full of spam. People telling me that Donald Trump's won because he's took us incredible brain pill. But somehow I don't think that's you guys, unless you're trying to tell me something. But that said, if you don't like something, you got to hit us up on the website and tell us. Hit us up on the all the social media platforms.
And if you like something, let us know, and we'll include more of it in there.
And Elvira, if you're listening, I don't have that standee anymore. I could hit you up for another one. You know, Scott's going to come out and see you soon. See if you have any in your garage.
Bring it down with you to Texas.
bring me one.
Even better, we'd love for you to come back to Houston sometime and hopefully attend the convention or something out here so we can meet you. That would be the experience of meeting Elvira is going to be incredible. When I met Bernie Wrightson, I was shaking. The same thing will happen if we meet Elvira.
Yeah, I've got a few things. You're showing me your magazines that you got with the like the Scream Queens. I've got a House of Mystery with Elvira.
Oh, cool.
On there, I want to get her to sign that. That would be badass. But you know, I'll hand that to you. Throw your backpack we'll see what on we can the do. Way. Or she could just show up and sign it in person because she's that cool. But yeah. We'll see.
Come out to dinner with the scary dad.
Hey guys. That's going to go ahead and close down episode number 21 of Scary Dad Podcast. Like I said, we joke, we mess around here, but seriously, all of the little social media blips that you can help us out with, they really make a difference, and they don't cost you much. If you're more interested in stuff that'll cost you money, you can hit our Amazon store. Not gonna harp on that. Just go to the website, click the button, and buy stuff. Every little bit helps. We were able to afford a new microphone out of the bargain bin at Goodwill, and we're gonna be plugging that in after we get it fixed. I mean, we're moving up. We're moving up. We really are coming up, guys.
And we've got some great announcements coming up in the very near future. So make sure you pay attention and subscribe and share so you don't miss anything. And anybody you think might be interested in the podcast or just, you know, becoming part of our horror community, make sure you pass this on to them.
Did you guys grow up with a local horror host that you remember that we didn't mention? Because I'm sitting here looking at a page that's got like 100. But I don't know many of these because I grew up in Houston. I was looking at the Chicago affiliates. Like,
right.
We didn't have a local one. So if you guys have an old horror host that you'd like to pay tribute to, or just link us to so we can say hello, let us know that too. Anyway, guys, episode 21 in the bag.
In the can.
Stay scary.
Later.
Oh my goodness, look at the time! I'm going to be late! Oh, I better step on it!
Whoa! Who the devil are you?
Hey, you got that right, Mama.
Pay attention, we are going to bring you Frankenstein versus Dracula.
What sign were you born under? Danger, high voltage.
Signed one of them organ donor cards my own darn self, and in the event of my untimely demise, some lucky viewer will receive the following: a beautiful Wurlitzer organ.
Ah. I don't know about you, but watching these horrible old movies always gives me an appetite, so I thought it might be a good idea to whip up a little lunch. There, take that and that.
I'm really a big fan of yours.
Big fan of mine?
Oh, yeah, I think you're hot stuff.
All right.
Oh, hi there. Boy, you know, coming through walls like that can be really tough sometimes. You just never know who you're going to run into in there.
I've got myself a new boyfriend.
Oh, a new boyfriend.
That's right. He's 22 years old, and we make whoopee 6 times a day, every day of the week.
Darling, you were wonderful. I don't think you'll ever appreciate how much you've done for me tonight. Where are you going? You mean this is only a one-fright stand?
What is it really like being the best-known and most feared movie monster?
I get, like, free tickets, I don't have to stand in line at the theater, and everybody in general just kind of wants to cut me a break.
This was your last chance, Elvira, and you blew it.
Hey, let's not get personal, okay? I'm
just saying. For the last time, Elvira. Now take off the dress.
No! I'm not-